You're listening to Weird Medicine. Weird Medicine on 202. Is that his theme song?
I don't think it is, but I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, or in Morse code. What did you think of that, John? You didn't know I was a ham radio operator.
I knew you were a ham.
I knew you were an operator.
There you go. There you go.
I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, P.A. John. Hello, John.
Hello, Steve.
And we also have in the studio tonight, Jefferson the lawyer, who's been on sabbatical. Hello, Jefferson.
Hey, glad to be back.
And we have double vasectomy Todd, the man who one vasectomy only pissed off his nads.
Hey,
is that right?
Going? Yeah, that's right.
Very good. I stole that from you. Welcome to the first and still only uncensored medical program in the history of radio. We're doing our dead celebrity special tonight, where we'll be turning the senseless deaths of famous people into medical information you can use to try to live forever. If you're new to this show, we try to deal with medical problems honestly and with plain language and with no limitations regarding content. If you have a medical question and you might be embarrassed to take it to your regular medical provider, give us a shout at drsteve202@gmail.com or visit the Weird Medicine Forum at ronfez.net or call our voicemail line at 423-343-8884. That's 423-DIE-TOOTY. We're also on Twitter at Weird Medicine. I also want to welcome to the studio Susie, who is our studio audience tonight. Hello, studio audience.
Yay!
Oh, boy. Please remember, we are not your healthcare providers, especially yours, Susie. And check out anything you hear from us with your regular doctor, PA, nurse practitioner, acupuncturist, yoga instructor, or whatever. So we have some old business to do. Number one, we've been talking about Big A and Pat Fromunaki and Big A's travails. I am happy to announce that Big A finally got his BiPAP machine.
That's great.
And he got it for free, and he used it for the first time last night and actually slept lying down for the first time in many months.
And hasn't woken up quite yet.
he's working on it. But I think it's going to be a really good thing for him. And sleep apnea is one of those things, especially severe sleep apnea like he has, is nothing to fool around with. I mean, it can cause some really serious long-term health problems. And when we do our October show, October 17th, live in the studio in New York City, we'll have Big A on and we'll talk about how he's doing. We're getting him, I know he's doing better on his diet, we're getting him, hopefully the weight will come off a lot faster now that he's on his sleep apnea machine. He's going to feel better in general. He's certainly right. Going to be safer driving around New York in a taxi cab. So I'm really happy for him. I do want to throw out props. This has been a project that's been going on for a long time. And the people that we need to thank are Bill Muller from Respironics, Mark Gordon from Community Surgical, and Maria Russo from Sleep Care. And I think it's, we'll post their website on our website at drsteve.com. Mm-hmm. So if you have any sleep apnea needs, you can go check them out. But they were really cool to help us out with that. Especially, I want to thank John Gray from caseofthemondays.net. He also works for Sleep Care, and we've been plugging him. And I really want you to go to caseofthemondays.net and buy their CD. And I'm just going to play you a little snippet of it. We're having some audio problems here in the Weird Medicine studio, so all we have is the left channel that we can play in mono. But this really sounds good in stereo. And this is Case of the Mondays.
Got a good sound to it. Oh, yeah.
Ear piercing shrieks, shattered bottles at the bar. Kick drum beats like thunder, lightning shoots from the guitar. Blazing grass so fiercely blast, breaking hearts and busting glass. While the bass kicks your fucking ass, with a little grace and a touch of blast. Never seen anything like this before. Fire flame, sleep up through.
All right, I could play that all night.
Yeah,
really,
yeah,
you know, great. We've been plugging his shit for you know, several months now, and I actually have to admit I never went to their website to check it out.
That sounds good.
So last night I did it. I was like, damn, I'm buying that CD.
Oh, absolutely. That
sounds
really
like Mighty
rocking.
Mighty Boss Tones.
That's
or something
exactly
like that.
What I was thinking, yeah. Was Boss Tones.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I'd love to see them live. I bet they're a blast.
Yeah.
So check them out. That's John Gray from caseofthemondays.net. And if you go there and send him a note, just thank him for helping out Big A, because that saved him $5,000 easy.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that was a really cool thing to do. Number two, old business, a double vasectomy Todd's penis reclamation challenge. Now, we do not do weight loss challenges. That's just hackneyed. But when we first started, Jefferson and Todd were going to see who could lose the most weight, and it just seemed kind of so old-fashioned.
Overdone.
Yeah, and it's been done a million times. But we found some information on the internet that showed, well, actually it wasn't on the internet, it was on PubMed, which is in the medical literature, that showed that for every 35 pounds of weight loss, you will gain 1 inch of penis length. And so my thing has always been, I'd just love to lose 350 pounds. But Todd can verify this. He used to have an 8-inch erect penis.
That is correct.
And then gained 90 pounds and found that he was down to 6 and change, right?
I was down to not quite 6. Not I was 5 and a lot of change.
5 and a whole bunch of change. Okay.
Yep.
And we hooked him up with MJ Kovaleski, who is a trainer and bodybuilder. And if you want some jerk-off material, definitely go to her website.
She's going to love that.
Because she is a...
Hey!
Well,
wow.
She doesn't look like one of those bodybuilding women that I've seen before that just kind of look like men with bikinis on. I mean, she looks very womanly. She's amazing, and the videos are fantastic. But it's obvious when you go there that she knows what she's doing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nutritionally and bodybuilding-wise,
right.
There's no question about it. She knows what she's doing. She's won a bunch of awards and won a bunch of contests and stuff like that. So we hooked her up with Double Vasectomy Todd. And if you want to just sort of review just briefly where you are on that now, and then
right
give
on.
Us your the update.
All right. Well, the update, if you're following my Twitter, you may already know this.
And Twitter is DBL Vaz Todd.
Right on. That's okay. Right. I did my last weigh-in yesterday. I was 227 pounds, so I'm down about 5 more.
And
from
you started
last.
At 260, right?
That's right. Started
okay.
At 260. I'm down 227. And also, if you follow my Twitter, you saw this picture. I tweeted it up, and there's actually a measurement length on the actual tape measure that we used. So,
okay.
Yay.
Yeah, because we don't care really how much weight you've lost. We
no.
want to know how many inches of pain that you've gained.
That's exactly right. And so you'll be able to follow that.
Okay, well, tell us. So you started at 5 and change.
Started at 5 and change, and I'm now up to almost 7.
Damn.
Not
are you kidding
quite,
me?
No, it's over 6.5, around the 6.75 mark.
Okay, so let me get my calculator out real quick. You have lost how much weight?
260 to 227 260 minus 227 is
33 pounds, and you have gained
right at 2 inches, close to it.
Wow! So it's actually
just under two.
Okay, just under two. So you've lost 33 pounds, and you've gained almost 2 inches. I'm guessing is that that's an average, that you will gain less and less as you lose more and more, because you're going to reach a limit, as you said last time. I mean, it's, there's not infinite penis length there. So
there's also a lot of things that can probably affect the measurement.
Yeah.
I'm saying? I mean,
yeah,
you may measure... Right. You know, how erect you
might be having a good day or a bad day.
Exactly. Yeah. There might be shrinkage. There could be lots of things going on.
Well, it's like that show, The Biggest Loser, or whatever. I mean, those guys losing 200-300 pounds, they're not kidding.
Right. Right.
You know.
Yeah, you can't gain what you
depends
you know,
on what you didn't already have. But that's, I mean, that's the joke. You lose 350 pounds and you've got a 10-inch cock all of a sudden. So, you know,
depends on how much front butt you got to start.
Yeah, that's right.
But what you're looking for, though, is to max out what you got.
Right.
Get in great shape, and you'll have the highest possible number of inches.
Right. Exactly.
And if you're 350 pounds, you're just looking for it. So.
Yeah. Well, no, that's a good point. That's a good point, because it can actually recede, and you'll have an innie. And then, you know, anything you get is worth doing. So I think
the cool thing about that is you could just sit there and rock back and forth in your seat and jack off without
you could literally fuck yourself.
Dude, that is cold comfort at best. Oh my God.
Who would think of that? That is genius. That is genius. I never would have thought of that in a million years. So there is a benefit.
So the next time you have that person in the office, you're going to have to lose weight. Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. I'm at this weight on purpose. Yeah. I gained up to this.
That's it. Fuck you. No, I'm going to fuck myself.
Yeah. If you want to gain inches on... or reclaim, really, it's a reclamation. If you want to reclaim penis inches and you want to try double vasectomy, or the program at Double Vasectomy Todd is on, go to musclesorority.com or email mj@musclesorority.com.
Right on. My new best
friend. And be
friend.
Nice. I mean, come on. We're making jokes, but she is amazing. And this program that you're on is really... tailored to you. I mean, it's not something she's just spewing out of a printer somewhere.
Oh no, amazingly specific. And you know, and she's amazingly attentive. She checks on me.
Yep.
Sees how I'm doing.
Well, she's real positive, because she's always twittering on her Twitter about you and the rest of her clients and stuff. And Bob Kelly, everyone knows that they can no longer make whale jokes about Bob Kelly, and it's because of her. He went on her program. So you're done with phase one. You're getting ready to do phase two.
Yeah, I got the magic email the other day. Phase two begins Monday.
Okay. I'm so impressed with the results that you've had that Tacy and I are also now clients of MJ's. And we're going to be starting the program probably by next Monday. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, good for you.
So, yep, very exciting. Okay, enough old business. We have gotten time from Sam and Dave, and we really appreciate that.
Yes, thank
that they,
you.
They gave us this hour to do a medical show that's a little different on all the dead celebrities. I mean, when David Carradine died, we didn't do David Carradine jokes. I mean, I'm not going to joke about him. He's one of my heroes. But we did talk about autoerotic asphyxiation, and we had an opportunity to kind of bring that out and talk about the dangers of it by yourself, and had some ideas about that. And I think we did a really tasteful but informative and entertaining show, because it's an interesting topic. Mm-hmm. So we've had Michael Jackson pass away, Billy Mays, which was kind of a surprise, Farrah Fawcett, who has been documenting her own demise for the last, I guess, couple of years, so that was not a surprise, but still something that might be preventable for people. And then old Fred Travellina, and heck, Gale Storm, and we're just having this rash of celebrity deaths lately. Of course, it really makes sense statistically. If you've got 350 million people in the country and we've got a crap load die every day, I don't know the exact number, we can find that number, there's going to be a certain finite percentage of those people are celebrities, people that everybody has heard of, or in the case of Fred Travellina, you know, some people have heard of.
Right.
And so...
Tippy Tom.
And then the other one that really bothered me the most, to be honest with you, is Tippy Tom.
Yeah.
And so we're going to do Tippy's discussion first, and we don't have to talk about how alcoholism is bad for you. Everybody, I hope, knows that. And if you're a substance abuser, we've talked about substance abuse and how to get help. And when we do our October 17th show, we're going to do a whole segment on substance abuse. So I don't think we have to belabor that point. That would be kind of a hackneyed thing. I thought for Tippy Tom, we'll do a little, let's just talk about our experience with him. And then I wanted to play the audio of Tippy Tom when we were in studio with him. Before the third live Weird Medicine, we were trying to think of how are we going to top, which it wouldn't be hard to do, doing a rectal on Pat Duffy and then doing a rectal on Roland.
Right.
You know, how are we going to top that? Well, I came up with the asinine idea that we would do a rectal exam and a on Tippy Tom.
Right.
And I don't know why, other than, you know, we had to come up with something. And Opie insists on us doing, or me,
doing a rectal exam
when we go in. And I was really hoping that we could do something that couldn't be topped so that we could end the bit once and for all. So I got a hold of Keith the Cop, said, can you bring him in? Got a hold of Danny and E-Rock and said, what do you think of this idea? And so we set it up. So we got into into town, and I was really kind of hoping that morning that Keith couldn't find him, because, you know, it's a homeless guy. You can't just go to his address. You don't know. But Keith is so damn good that he apparently had no trouble finding Tippy Tom. And he texted me and said, he's here, come on over. So it was about an hour before that was back when they were on CBS, so before they came over to do the XM show. And we walked in, and Tippy was sitting on the front front row of the bleachers, and there were a bunch of people already there.
Yeah,
who were you know, in the studio audience, and they were all kind of in this wide radius that was cleared around where Tom was sitting, because he smelled so unbelievably bad. And there's pictures on our website. If you go to drsteve.com, there's pictures from the third time we were there. Mm-hmm. And you can see all these people with their T-shirts up over their nose.
Some wearing surgical masks.
Well, I handed out surgical masks. Remember, I brought a handful of them, not realizing we would need them for that. It was unbelievable. But we sat down next to him and did a pre-interview. And really, to you and me, we've smelled worse. I mean, I really have smelled worse. Maybe not that filled up the room quite like that, but, I mean, I've smelled worse. So it wasn't that bad.
Cyst.
And, yeah, people were amazed that we were just sitting close to Tom and having a normal conversation with him. Mm-hmm. And it was before he started drinking, and he was... I was struck by just a sweet guy he really was.
Right.
I mean, sitting down when he's not on the air, because he knew when the mics were on, this man mm-hmm. was not stupid. And he was an entertainer.
Right.
And he was extremely entertaining. And when we were just sitting down, it's like, okay, this is what our idea was. We want to do a physical exam on the air. And we're going to do a prostate exam. Is that cool with you? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, I don't want to do anything that's going to make you uncomfortable. And, you know, we just kind of went through the whole informed consent thing. And he was totally cool with anything we wanted to do. And when we got in there to do it, you know, you and I put on our
protective gowns.
We had hazmat
gloves,
suits that we put on.
Masks.
And masks and all that stuff. And got ready to do it. And it was just amazing. The comedic timing he had, because first he starts screaming before we even did anything. I don't want to get into his time, because we've got audio of it. And but it was amazing the comedic timing he had. And I will have to say that I was expecting, when he pulled down his pants, a total horror show. And I figured Keith might have encouraged him maybe to not clean up back there.
Surprisingly,
or whatever.
Unbelievable. Oh, it was unbelievable. Really,
as a matter of fact,
that response. It was unbelievable.
Very clean. Very, as a matter of fact, compared to the rest of him, his ass smelled like flowers. And when we got done, there was no blood. I was expecting, I don't know what I was expecting, but I was expecting some real problems. And so I just thought maybe we would play the audio. Now, this is not audio off the air. This is actually audio off the camera. And this is Tippy Tom when we were doing rectal exam in the studio. I hope. Well.
You can put the finger up the ass. Okay. Yeah, will you rotate a little bit? Come on, check this asshole. All
right. Tom, do you want to tell us what's going on?
Ow, it hurts.
I hadn't even touched him yet.
Hey, come on, Tom.
I'm up here now. Come on.
Oh, one thing, I guess we have to preface that this was the same show that Tom sat in Anthony's chair and was playing with all of his toys. Yeah. And he had all of his Anthony's toys, including the inappropriate bell and other things, all kind of stacked in front of him, just getting ready. And I didn't realize till afterward that he had consciously done all of this. So.
Oh, man, get ready. Oh.
All right, here we go.
Oh! Oh!
Wow. Your prostate is normal size. You don't feel anything abnormal on it at all, and we're checking you for blood right now.
It's a miracle! Yay!
So, no blood. We tested his butt for blood, and there wasn't any. And later in the day, I proclaimed him healthier than Fez Wadley. And a year later, he's dead, so what do I know?
Yeah.
But we met him one time. I really enjoyed the time that we had with him. And, of course, after the show, he drank a bunch of beers, got drunk, puked on the floor. Some intern had to clean it up. And Keith had to drag him off, and he refused to go to the clinic appointment that we'd made for him that day. So, and we never saw him again.
No.
So Tippy Tom will be greatly missed by the fans of XM202 Sirius 197.
Yeah. Moving on.
All right. Let's talk about Michael Jackson. Have been a lot of stories about Michael Jackson's autopsy, and a top official with the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office denounced as inaccurate a British tabloid story that claimed to have details of Michael Jackson's autopsy. This was the report that said he had needle marks everywhere, and that that he was emaciated and he was bald. And all that stuff. And the Sun, apparently the Sun, which is a tabloid in Britain, claimed that it had details from the medical examiner's findings. And the coroner's office is saying that it did not come from their office. They don't know where the information came from, but the information is not accurate, and some of it is totally false. Now, they said some of it is totally false. They didn't say all of it was false. You know, Jackson died at age 50 of unknown causes. We don't know how he died. When the story first came out, everyone was talking about prescription drugs and that he had a cardiologist in his house that was giving him Demerol. We don't know if any of that stuff is true. The doctor denies it. We hear that there weren't any prescription drugs found in his house. And then now the story today. Now, we're recording this on Wednesday. By Saturday, there may be more out there. But as of today, there are people saying that he wanted this drug called Diprivan, which is a sedative that we use in the ICU or as an anesthetic in the operating room, that he just said that it made him sleep well. And that's a drug that, administered improperly, could definitely cause you to die. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they didn't say anything about an IV being hooked up to him or anything like that, so I'm not buying that one right now either. So we're on the record of saying we don't know.
Right.
But I think it's not germane, no pun intended, to the topic to say that, you know, how he died. John just got that. But what is important is this whole topic of celebrities and doctors, you know.
Right.
There is this thing out there. It's a concept called concierge medicine, and that's where one doctor will have one or two really rich clients, and they do nothing but take care of those clients. And it sounds like a great idea if you're rich enough to have one doctor that does nothing but take care of you. But I think that it's a problem because that is your sole source of income. Mm-hmm. You're going to start wanting to please that person because you don't want them to go, well, F you, I'm going to get another doctor if you don't do what they say. And when that happens, you get Dr. Nick with Elvis. And I don't think I'm committing libel by saying that. You get whoever Anna Nicole Smith's doctor was. You get to the point where you don't want to say no. And then absolute power corrupts absolutely. So the person that you're serving may start making more and more outrageous demands as their pleasure centers in their brain start getting tickled by OxyContin and other things, mm-hmm. you know. And I think being a medical advisor to some people who are in the business, it's always a struggle to keep that kind of balance that you have with your regular patients, to treat them like a regular patient and to set boundaries. And I think when you're a concierge physician and you're living with the person, who needs a doctor to live with them except a doctor's spouse, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know. What do you guys think, since you're all just staring at me?
Well, I think it's a great idea, to be honest with you, because I could really – I think it would be good things and bad things, I guess. Great idea because you have that one person that you can always call at any time of the day
mm-hmm.
because, you know, they are there with you all the time. Bad idea – the only thing is you can't do absolutely everything, but you could always get somebody to the right place.
Right.
So if they're paying you however much money to stay with you to do these things for you, they're still going to have to end up paying money to do other things, so why not just have a regular doctor?
Well, and here's the thing.
That they would go to.
If you're paying somebody $300,000 to be your personal physician, and what I hear... And again, we don't know for sure, but this is just what's been in the media, is that his doctor was paid $300,000 for 2 months of work because he was just going to be with him on the tour, which was going to be 50 dates in like 2 months, something like that.
That's just to make sure he probably doesn't stroke out or something.
It sounds right to me. He's 50 and he's going on a grueling tour, and a personal physician makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Hard to say no to that person. And again, we're not really talking about Michael Jackson because we don't know. I'm really hoping that this doctor didn't do anything inappropriate. Matter of fact, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, he's not a suspect.
He's absolutely not a suspect.
They called him a witness.
Right.
Wednesday, when we're taping, he's not a suspect.
Right. He was considered a witness.
Right.
But I think, there are some celebrities out there that had doctors that had a hard time saying no. Because when you've got Elvis as a client, how you go say no to him?
Well, you're not. And that's the whole thing. I think when you do rich client, but someone that's in the entertainment business, a lot of these doctors, I think, do it because they get to be in the limelight. They get to meet other entertainers and exciting people. And I think you just almost foster potential ethical problems.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, I'm not saying this particular doctor, but a doctor in this position, how could you look at him and say, no, I'm not going to give you what you're wanting?
Yeah. Yeah, it's intoxicating.
Right.
And doctors are human, too, and they like... I mean, how often do you get to hang around somebody who's famous? I mean, we have the same... I mean, I don't treat anybody on 202 other than some real minimal things and give them some advice, but I'm really a medical advisor rather than their doctor, and I like it that way.
Right.
But it would be so tempting to say, hey, I'm going to move up there, and I'll just be your doctor, because it's so much fun. We've been up there. I mean, who have we met just by doing weird medicine? I mean, we met, all the people from 202, but other people. We were in the studio when Grandmaster Flash was there. We were in the studio when...
guy got his tongue stuck to the pole during Christmas Story.
right after.
Oh, that's right. That was the guy that was on Big Kev's Keeks.
Keeks. I forgot about. I can't remember his name.
Well,
I don't know anybody's
but,
name.
You know, what, but it is intoxicating. It's really exciting and really hard to keep your equilibrium when you're in that kind of world and you're not used to it.
Well, if you did that, think about it. You're crossing that line from being a doctor that works in an entertainment business to being an entertainer that just happens to have a medical license.
Yeah.
And I think that might be where some of these doctors, they feel like they are an entertainer or they are in the entertainment business and they just happen to be able to write scripts.
The other thing is, not necessarily just from the famous people aspect, but when patients come in demanding something, sometimes if it's not really that outrageous, you'll give in just because it's just easier to go ahead and order a study or prescribe a medication as opposed to trying to go through the whole process of saying you don't need this and no, I'm not going to do it
for you. The classic example of that is antibiotics for a cold.
Right.
You know, doctors go through that every day. I've got a cold, give me an antibiotic, and you want to. Really, what you should do is counsel the patient on why antibiotics don't work for viruses, because, and also that we have all these antibiotic resistant bacteria out there now because we've been over prescribing antibiotics. But sometimes you just write the damn prescription, you know, and you fool yourself. It's not even fooling yourself. You rationalize that, well, maybe they've got a bacterial overgrowth in their sinus or something like that.
Right.
And so that's the client. So just imagine that your client now is someone famous and they're demanding some OxyContin because they've got low back pain. It's the same kind of thing that am I going to go through not telling them no and then they're going to get mad and they're going to fire me and I'm going to lose my position in this world, or can I just write the prescription because it's no big deal? Once you step over that line, it's really hard to pull yourself back again.
Right.
Right.
So, and I don't know the legalities of it, but when you are in a regular doctor's office, you've got your peers looking over your shoulder, even indirectly. But people know. I mean, you know, in town, who's writing the
doing the right thing,
and who's not. Right. I mean, you do know for the most part. Some people will fool you, but for the most part, most doctors know in a town who's writing inappropriate amounts of narcotics and stuff like that. And believe me, the patients know.
Oh, yeah.
And but when you're a concierge doctor, I don't know that you have that feedback from the community, from your community of doctors that are kind of being the superego that are keeping you from doing things.
Right.
So you can start even losing touch with what is ethically right in a situation like that because you're practicing in a vacuum.
Yep.
It's just one-on-one with you and the person. So, you know, there's, besides the seduction of being near a celebrity, there's the challenge of not getting too close to the patient. But, you know, they say we should not treat friends, family, or ourselves, and it goes back to setting up situations where we might deviate from the type of care that we would normally provide. And when you start doing that, you're making a mistake.
Because a lot of times for family, it's, well, you really need to have this, and this done. But if it were just because you don't want to miss anything on your family.
Yeah.
But if it were somebody else, you would say, well, I don't really have to do this because I don't really think it's that. And we'll just wait until another time. So.
Yeah. So.
Patients aren't as important as family. That's what it sounded like, but that's not the case.
Yeah. No, I know. You know, when you get paged and you have to leave dinner because you got paged out, your family feels like your patients are more important to you than they are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and at that moment, I guess that is the message that you're sending. So it's a problem, too. So, you know. But anyway, Billy Mays. Let's talk about Billy Mays a little bit. And what we're really going to take out of this is sudden death. You know, Billy Mays died Sunday. He likely died of a heart attack in his sleep. And the autopsy did not show head trauma because at first they thought, oh, gosh, the guy was on TV, said he got his head hit in the airplane by luggage that had fallen or something, you know, that had fallen out overhead, and then the next day he's dead. And a lot of people were like, this sounds a lot like Natasha Richardson, where she got hit in the head and she's walking and talking, and then the next thing you know, she's got a brain bleed. But they did not find any evidence of that. What they did find was sudden death. And if you're not sure who we're talking about, this is Billy Mays. pull-ups. Well, how stupid am I?
Super strong. Super, super strong.
Now that's the strength of Billy Mays Guaranteed.
Super strong. Super, super strong.
With the flick of a switch. But it gets even better. So stop getting out of bed every night. Just pee in the closet. With confidence. Just pee in the closet. It's that easy.
So anyway, just pee in the closet. I wonder what that came from. That was the Billy Mays gangster rap. That I got off YouTube. So, but you know, I was amazed at the outpouring of grief over the loss of Billy Mays. Everybody in the world knows who this guy is, you know. And I would have thought that people thought he was awful or crazy or something, but people really liked him.
It's interesting. Yeah. He actually was in the recent article or recent issue of Playboy.
Was that right?
Yeah.
Did they do? Was it
just
20 questions or was it the big interview?
No, it was just a regular article.
Okay.
It wasn't the 20 questions.
But it wasn't the interview?
Talked about, it wasn't the interview, no.
Okay. So he didn't show his sham whale?
No.
Okay.
He showed his awesome auger.
There you go.
But yeah, it was interesting. I was thinking, why in the world? This is weird to see an article on Billy Mays.
No, he was huge. He was huge. And you know, all those products that he did, he had a piece of.
Right.
So that
except
was the thing.
OxyClean, or was it OxyClean, or Orange?
Orange Glow, maybe.
Yeah. When they sold that, he didn't get anything. At least that's what the Playboy article said.
Okay, all right. Well, you would know because you read Playboy. And I mean, that's good. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I just want to make that clear. Billy died of sudden cardiac arrest, probably in his sleep. And what it turned out in the autopsy that he had high blood pressure, or they knew that he had high blood pressure, but what he had was an enlarged heart muscle and enlarged wall of the left ventricle in his heart, and that is real consistent with people that die suddenly. And when I first heard that he died, I was like, this guy's heart exploded, or a vessel in his brain had to explode, because he just seemed so excitable.
Right.
And the official cause of death will be issued after the toxicology. We don't know any more than that. But I thought that it would be good to talk about what are the risks of sudden death, because sudden death sucks. You go to sleep one night and you wake up dead, and or you just keel over and that's it. You know. And on a personal note, that happened to my dad. He was 86, but he got up. The alarm woke him up. He turned the alarm off, and then he went back to sleep, and then never woke up again. Not a bad way to go. He had shot his age in golf the day before, so he was really enjoying himself. But you know, he wasn't ready to go, and I didn't get to say goodbye. So you know, but he didn't suffer. So there you go. So, but sudden cardiac death. Mays was 51, and nobody was expecting this to happen to him. High blood pressure is, quote-unquote, the silent killer. And, you know, everyone out there, just get your damn blood pressure checked. If you don't do anything else this year, get your blood pressure checked. You know, let's talk a little bit about how blood pressure works. And the way I like to explain it is, let's say, imagine you have a water pump, and you take a hose, and you hook it up to both ends of the water pump. So the input... or the output goes through the hose, and then the hose goes back into the input, so it's just going around in a circle, okay? And then let's take a pressure gauge and put it somewhere in the hose. And that's basically a model of the circulatory system of the human body. Now, if you turn the pump down, in other words, if you make the pump less less effectively, what's that going to do to the pressure in the pressure gauge?
It'll go down.
It'll go down, exactly right. Well, that's what beta blockers do. And if you took a section of the pipe out and made it bigger and replaced it with a bigger section of pipe, and when I say bigger, I mean bigger diameter, what will it do to the pressure?
Go down.
It'll go down, that's right. And that's what ACE inhibitors, which is another kind of blood pressure medicine, and calcium channel blockers do. Okay, so, but it's really interesting that the only two medications that have shown to decrease heart attack and stroke are the beta blockers and the calcium, and the ACE inhibitors. Okay, so there are medicines out there that, if you treat your blood pressure, can make you live longer and make you live a happier life. Now, I don't know if if Billy was on blood pressure medicine. I assume he was. Obviously, it's not perfect. It doesn't make you live forever, and it doesn't completely erase your risk. But decreasing your risk factors will definitely make a difference. Don't use drugstore machines, because they will read notoriously wrong. Go and get a human being to check your blood pressure, you know, and get your cholesterol checked. That's another one. And if mm-hmm. if you modify those risk factors, you can live longer, and you can at least decrease your risk of having what happened to him happen to you. Stress is a big thing as well, but anybody's blood pressure that's around 140 over 90 is called what we call pre-hypertension. That used to be called normal in the old days, but now we keep ratcheting down these criteria. And anyone from 140 to over 90 to about 160 over 100 is called stage 1 hypertension, and they would be treated with lifestyle management, like increasing your exercise, getting your
weight under control.
Weight under control, exactly, and those kinds of things. And then and stopping smoking. And then they would probably be put on a single medication. And then people with blood pressure higher than 160 over 100 would be probably put on two different medications. And this is something that's eminently treatable. And people that are out there are walking around not knowing that they have this because there's no symptoms.
Right.
Until something bad happens. Mm-hmm. So get your blood pressures checked. Go see your doctor. Get a physical done every once in a while.
And if you don't have insurance, the free clinic or
the county medical.
Yeah.
What are we trying to say? I know exactly what you're talking about, but the medical center in each county in the United States has one.
Yeah, you can go there and say, I would like to get my blood pressure checked, and they will check it.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, blood pressure is fairly easy to do.
Yeah.
And if you're a patient, an established patient, they'll do it.
They'll do it for free.
At any time you walk in, they'll just check your blood
pressure. If they're charging you for that, you need to complain.
Yeah.
Just to go in and get your blood pressure checked. That should be a free service.
As long as you're not doing it every day.
Right. And even if you are doing it every day.
But be prepared if they find it to be elevated, if they say, we would like to go ahead and get you back to see the doctor today, be prepared to stay, because it is a liability for them if you walk out.
Yep.
You know.
And if you're a monster, you know, a big fatso, then be prepared for them to use a thigh cuff. You know, because you have to use a bigger cuff. That's the other issue, is make sure they're using the right cuff. Because if you're a 350 or 400 pounder or more, and they're using a regular cuff on you, it's going to read high.
And if you're little bitty, be prepared for them to use a little weenie cuff.
There you go. I'm just going to let that just sit there.
Yeah.
All right. Major risk factor for heart disease, sudden death, and stroke. Very easily treated. Should be part of every adult's yearly checkup. If you get enlargement of the muscle of the heart, it does increase your risk of sudden death. So get that checked.
Can they, like, scan your heart or something?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
absolutely.
Could they, like, found this problem with Billy Mays?
They may have even known about it. I don't even know. I mean, you can do an echocardiogram, right, which is where they just put jelly on your chest and check it with sound waves, and they make a picture like a sonar.
Right.
And they can get a really accurate picture of the size of the ventricle without any pain or discomfort at all. There are other imaging techniques that they can do, including a CAT scan now, where they can do a CAT scan angiogram, where they take slices, pictures of cross sections of the vessels of the heart, and you can look at that and tell if you've got calcium in the vessels and if the ventricle is enlarged as well.
So if you have, like, a history of high blood pressure, if your family, if it's in your family, is that a procedure or a test you should do?
Absolutely. I mean, family history is one of the independent risk factors of heart disease.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, yep, absolutely. Let's move on to Farrah Fawcett. Farrah, I've got some audio here, and I don't know what it is.
Some guy flew from Germany and stood outside my gate, you know, and it was during the summer. It was so hot, and he was like, had flowers that had wilted, and, you know, the cops say never, never let them, never sign the order, never acknowledge it. But he was, you know, Ryan went to the gate, and Ryan came in and said, you've got to talk to him. He's weeping. And he was actually weeping, and you know, now he flies over a lot, and he's sweet. But yes, strange obsession.
So that's Farrah dealing with a stalker who came to her house. And like Anthony Cumia, let him in.
Yeah, you know, just come on over.
Yeah, just come on in.
And if the lights are on.
So, good old Farrah. You know, she was my first fantasy girl, I think, because she came out, in 76? And I graduated high school in 73, so she was my first kind of almost adult fantasy. That poster, holy moly. I mean, who didn't have their... You guys are too young, but everybody had that poster on the wall.
No, dude, I had that poster.
Did you?
Yeah, the orange suit with the Mexican like tapestry behind her. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they say she's the last of the pinups.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
I'll buy that.
Yeah, because who buys posters anymore? I don't... You just go on the internet and see pictures of things. I mean, I don't know that people are buying posters much anymore. I know Walmart still sells them, but I don't ever see anybody buying them.
No.
So, yeah, that makes sense. Well, she was 62, and she was a Golden Globe nominee. You know, people kind of make fun of Farrah because of her stint on Charlie's Angels, but damn, she was not a bad actress at all. If you ever saw The Burning Bed, she was great in that.
Right.
And, she had rectal cancer. And I thought we could just use this to talk a little bit. We've talked about colonoscopies on this show before, but let's talk a little bit about rectal cancer because we haven't talked about it specifically. It's the lower part of the colon. It connects the large bowel to the anus, and its primary function is to store formed stool in preparation for
excretion.
Yeah, evacuation. So, and like the colon, it's got three layers of wall, and and any one of them can develop problems. There's 150,000 cases of colorectal cancer every year in the United States, and 40,000 of those are diagnosed with rectal cancer. So, your risk factors would be increasing age, smoking again. So, I mean, how many times do we have to say it? If you're smoking, you've got to quit.
Right.
I mean, there's nothing, it's not good, that's not good for anything. You know, being fat, you can at least, if you listen to P.A. John, can have sex with yourself easier. So there's at least maybe some benefit there, but there's no benefit to smoking that I can think of.
It looks cool.
It does look pretty cool. Yeah. And I loved it when I did it. I loved it, and I would argue with people that said that there's nothing good about it when I smoked. So I get it.
It's a de-stressor.
I smoked three times. It's not, though. It actually increases, stress hormone levels in your body.
But you smoke more and more.
Psychologically, people think, oh, okay.
And you know why? It's because when you're a Coke addict, you get stressed when you're withdrawing, but when you do the Coke, you get less stressed because now you're getting yourself well again.
Right.
I mean, it's bullshit. You know, you think like it's relaxing you, but what it's really doing is you're just feeding the addiction.
Sure.
So nothing good about it. So smoking, colon cancer risk, family history of colon or rectal cancer, high fat diet can increase your risk of rectal cancer. And anyone that's had polyps obviously knows that they're at risk because their gastroenterologist has told them. Here's the thing about polyps. If you've had a polyp that was precancerous, your risk of having cancer goes up or is increased, but your risk of dying from cancer decreases. And why is that? Because you know it's there and you're going to go get your damn colonoscopies every year.
Right.
You know?
That's great.
So it's once you're alerted to this problem, you know, your chance of actually dying from it is less. So forgotten risk factor for colorectal cancer is lack of screening. In other words, not going and getting the finger up your ass, the fecal blood testing like we did on Tippy Tom. Mm-hmm. Not great tests. Colonoscopy is still the best test for colorectal screening. If you have a family history of colorectal cancer, or in a first-degree relative, which would be a mother, father, brother, sister, then you need to have colonoscopy 10 years before the age of the relative's diagnosis. So, in other words, if you had a relative that had colorectal cancer at 45, you need to get a colonoscopy done at 35. 10 years before, because it takes about 10 years for these things to go from a couple of abnormal cells till it kills you. Okay? Or at age 50. Everybody should have a colonoscopy at age 50. All right? So just do it. Go read our the article on the dreaded colonoscopy, either at ronfez.net or at drsteve.com, where we wrote about getting colonoscopy done. And there's nothing to it. It really is nothing to it. You blink, you wake up, it's done.
So hey, you know, you hear people say, you know, there's a, not that there's any good cancer, but you hear people say, you know, that's a good cancer or that's a bad cancer. What
where does colon cancer go? It's a good cancer in the sense that if you find it really early, it's totally curable.
Okay.
And it is findable early, unlike certain cancers like pancreatic cancer, which is a quote-unquote bad cancer, because usually by the time you find out that you've got it, it's really in an advanced stage. So colon cancer is detectable early, and it's curable. So, you know, none of them are good.
Sure.
The best cancer is the cancer that you prevent,
right.
But at least if you can find it early. You know, we are absolutely out of time. We were going to talk about Fred Travellina. We were going to talk about extreme life extension. Totally out of time. We will be back eventually, depending on the whims of E-Rock and Sam and Dave, here on Sirius 197 XM 202. Thanks to those two for giving us this time slot. Thanks, Jefferson, Double Vasectomy Todd. What's your name again? P.A. John. And Susie, thanks for showing up today. Don't forget to visit drsteve.com or check out our Twitter at Weird Medicine. And leave us your medical questions for next show at 423-343-8884. For P.A. John and me, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you soon for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Comfortably numb.